Hello and welcome to the Heathrow results call for the full year to 31st December 2022. Throughout the call, all participants will be in a listen-only mode, and afterwards there will be a question and answer session. Please note this call is being recorded. Today I'm pleased to present John Holland Kaye. Please begin your meeting.
Fantastic. Well, welcome and thank you for joining us, both those here in the room and those on the line. And This call is coming from the wonderful new SNBC offices near Liverpool Street, so we're very grateful to them for hosting us. And I think we are the inaugural users of this facility, so encourage anyone else to who wants to use it to do the same. And SNBC is new to our revolving credit facility, so very glad to have them as part of our team. So I'm John Holland Kaye, the Chief Executive at Heathrow Airport. And with me are Javier Echave, our Chief Financial Officer, and Sally Ding, Director of Treasury and Planning. Today, we're going to present our key operational and strategic highlights and a review of our financial performance and outlook, which I'll ask Javier to take us through, and then we'll conclude by taking your questions. So I'm going to start by giving an overview of our operational and financial highlights on slide four. So I don't need to tell you how challenging the last couple of years have been. Actually, the last 3 years have been challenging, but 2022, we thought the recovery year would be a much easier year than the years of lockdown. Actually, it's probably the most challenging year that we've had. It's a year of really strong recovery, but we have very much turned the corner, and we're in a very good position today. We welcomed 62 million passengers in 2022, and that's the highest growth of any airport in the world. And that's partly a function of how locked down the UK was. We had no real domestic market, where our competitors in Europe and in the US had much bigger markets they could fly even when borders were closed. And of course, we had no support from government in the UK. So all the companies in UK aviation had to cut down really hard, as well as having very little traffic. And then, as you will remember, in March of last year, less than a year ago, suddenly the borders opened again and people were able to catch up on travel, and that growth happened very quickly. So it was a hugely challenging growth. The equivalent of that growth that we accommodated was like fitting the whole of Frankfurt Airport into Heathrow in the space of less than 12 months. It's quite astonishing. And it took a huge amount of work from our teams across the whole airport. That includes not just the 5,500 people who work for Heathrow, but all of the remaining colleagues from Team Heathrow, who did an amazing job last year. The focus throughout last year has been keeping people safe. An airport is a very dangerous place to be. Bad things can happen. And we've always tried to focus on making sure that we're not growing without doing so safely. And some of the measures we took last year, in particular putting the cap in place to balance supply and demand, was done with a view to passenger and colleague safety, and it was absolutely the right thing to do. But in spite of that, we were still able to achieve this huge level of growth. Coming into 2023, we're still seeing growth coming through. We're currently looking at somewhere between 90 and 95% of pre-pandemic levels, but this is a much slower rate of growth, much more manageable. And as we'll see, we are in a very strong position. The good thing is, if you have traveled recently, you will know that it feels very much back to normal. We had a really good Christmas. Half term was fantastic. Border force strikes have been a real boon in many ways. It's shown just how quickly people can get through the border. So the airport is operating very smoothly. Our financial performance reflects the strong recovery, revenue growing to £2.9 billion and operating costs at £1.2 billion. This resulted in an adjusted EBITDA of £1.7 billion. Oh, yeah. Sorry, I'm on the wrong page. Adjusted EBITDA of £1.7 billion, even though we continue to make an adjusted loss before tax when asset and financing costs are taken into account. Our balance sheet remains strong, and we're ready for this period of growth. So if we look at our strategic priorities, these really haven't changed. Our aim is to rebuild the aviation ecosystem, focusing on safety, service, efficiency, and resilience. We need a regulatory settlement that incentivizes investment to deliver for consumers. aviation needs to play its part in getting to net zero by 2050. So we've taken the lead on net zero aviation, and we'll talk about that later. And then we need to deliver the longer term opportunity of sustainable, affordable, financeable and deliverable expansion. And I think the experience over the last couple of years has shown just how important it is and just how much opportunity there is with an expanded Heathrow, with more capacity to connect more regions of the UK to more long haul markets such as India. So we're going to start by looking at traffic performance, and this is on slide 7. So it's quite incredible looking at the chart of passenger levels. You see that actually we had a really difficult start to the year. Passenger numbers in January and February were well down on our expectations, and then suddenly in the middle of March you can see how suddenly traffic took off, built up to July, and then actually it's been pretty steady from July onwards through the seasons. But it's that real period of growth between March and July that was challenging. That's where in a very short space of time we saw a huge amount of growth. A lot of the growth has been through outbound leisure. We're seeing a bit more inbound leisure coming in, particularly since the US opened up. So particularly in the early days, a lot of it was people catching up on all the holidays they hadn't had over the previous couple of years. We're starting to see that coming in from the US a little bit more. Business travel is still down on where it would have been proportionately. So in quarter four of last year, the business travel mix was only about 28% compared to 32% in the same time in 2019. And some of that is the state of the global economy. Some of it's about the markets that open up. Some of it's also about what some of the big business travel companies are doing. You'll know that banks and consulting companies and tech companies are pulling back and cutting jobs, and you're likely to see less business travel happening when that is going on. But look at what's happening geographically. There's been quite a big change in some of the markets. Some of this is because important markets like China are still closed. So that's one of the reasons why Asia Pacific is still relatively low. The Middle East last year was proportionally above the overall average. A lot of that's because people are connecting through the Middle East to get to markets in Asia, even getting into Russia. We saw Latin America up significantly, and a lot of that is because we have Caribbean flights that used to be flown out of other UK airports that have come into Heathrow during the pandemic and have stayed there. So that's a leisure change rather than a business change. But it's good to see that North America is coming back strongly. And we're delighted that British Airways and Virgin have announced they're going to be restarting ticket sales to China. And we've seen good demand planned from Chinese airlines wanting to come back in as well. So on slide 8, we just look at how we compare with the other major airports in Europe. And I think this time last year, we had fallen to being the smallest of the big airports in Europe. And in fact, I think we were down to about number 40 globally in terms of our scale. Now we're back up to being the largest airport in Europe again. That's a really good position to be in. And you'll see here the scale of the growth that we have been able to achieve. 42 million passengers last year compared to 31 million at Charles de Gaulle, 27 million at Schiphol, 26 million at Madrid, and only 24 million at Frankfurt. So airports that started off better than us have not been able to grow faster than we have. So that really underpins the strength of Heathrow as the leading European hub. If we just move on to some of the operational measures, and there's a lot here, but I thought it'd be worth just sort of explaining a bit of what has been happening. And this is as much an insight into what's happening in global aviation as it is to what's happening at Heathrow. And the top left-hand slide shows arrivals punctuality for 2019. You'll see it's about 77% then. That actually was one of the highest levels you'd see anywhere in the world. And you'd see that departures punctuality in the next chart was even higher, 78.5%. And at that point, Heathrow was a well-oiled machine. We were the only major hub in the world which had as high punctuality as this, and we're the only one who had improved punctuality consistently for the last 5 years. But you'll see the impact of the general disruption during 2022. Punctuality started to fall as markets started to open up, and inbound punctuality was much, much lower than it had been before. And if planes come in late, then you start off at a disadvantage. People are out of position. So at a time when you don't have enough people anywhere and everyone's at full stretch, suddenly they are off schedule. And that has a knock-on impact to ground handling, other people taking bags on and off planes. You start to see that in some of the baggage performance. And we're showing here our baggage connection levels, which dipped down last year, still actually held up quite well. But you probably felt it more in the speed of time it took to get bags on and off planes. So if you were traveling and you had to wait a long time for your bag to come through, this is one of the major reasons why that was happening. And we also saw that with our passengers who require support. So typically this would be wheelchair passengers. And on some flights, we have a lot of wheelchair passengers. Some flights up to 40 or 50 people on a single flight, some of whom we know about and some of whom we don't know about. But if the planes come in late, then it's very hard for us to have the right people in place at the right time. And we actually saw more people traveling, requiring support last year than we had for the whole of 2019. So there's been a huge growth in uptake. And this is an area where we really struggled to both have enough people to be able to provide the service as we rapidly grew, but also have people in the right place for meeting their planes. And so we didn't meet the standards that we should have met, particularly through the summer. And that's mainly down to one terminal, and it's mainly down to arriving planes coming in late. But it's clearly not good enough, and that's something we've put a lot of resource into. And we've got more than 50% more people working in our wheelchair service today than we had back in the summer. So we've got a lot of focus on that, and we're now getting back to or have exceeded the levels that we should be meeting. So I just wanted to explain that because you will have seen a bit of coverage on that. What's interesting, though, is that if you look at passenger satisfaction scores, either overall or in terms of people who require support, they are in line with, or in some cases higher than they were in 2019. So people recognize that things are going to be a bit difficult, they might have to wait a bit longer, but they accepted that things were just going to be a little bit harder in this recovery year, and they cut us a bit of slack. And what I found most encouraging was that the measure we have for colleague passenger satisfaction for courtesy and helpfulness, that was much higher than 2019. So people were getting a good service from the people we did have in the terminals to make sure they were getting on their way. So not a perfect year, not where we want to be, but actually in the context, I think that's a really remarkable achievement. So as you know, we only employ 10% of the people who work at the airport. And so our role very often is to act as the mayor of the airport. We're like a small city, and I am the mayor, so I need to bring people together. So one of the things we set up last year was a program called Building Back Capacity, where we're working with all of the airlines, their ground handlers, all the control agencies such as Border Force, to make sure we're all working together to a common plan. And we touched a little bit on what that program looks like last time. It's around passengers, aircraft, baggage, capacity planning, resourcing, ground handling, and resilience. And I just want to give you a couple of figures to give you a bit of confidence that we are getting where we need to get to. The top chart shows active pass holders. And at the worst point of the pandemic, 18 months ago, that had fallen to less than 50,000 active pass holders on the airport. Over the last 18 months, it's grown to over 75,000. So we've hired 25,000 people in the last 18 months, 25,000 people. It's a phenomenal machine for recruiting and training people over that time. And you probably can imagine just how challenging it is to hire all those people, get them security pass, get them trained, and get them into work. And that's one of the challenges we've been dealing with last year as we grew so quickly. But you can start to see the benefits coming through. So we had slightly longer queues going through security at the peak of the summer. We actually had the same number of people working at that time than we had pre-pandemic. But a lot of them were new, and they weren't as efficient as they would have been a couple of years earlier. But you'll see through the year, our security queue times have come way, way down, and the vast majority of people get through in 5 minutes or less now. We're getting back to pre-pandemic levels of service. So we're making really good progress, and you can see similar kinds of service charts in other parts of the airport. And that's how we've been able to give a good service at Christmas and at half term. And it's why we're confident for the summer. So I want to touch on a couple of other areas before I hand over to Javier. So the first of those is around our carbon footprint, and this is on slide 11. And you'll know that we set out a few years ago our plans, Heathrow 2.0, which included an ambition to get to net zero aviation by 2050. And we made phenomenal progress on this over the last few years. We were, I think, the first business in aviation to commit to net zero by 2050. And that was about 5 years ago when we realized that the standard, which was CORSIA in aviation, just was not good enough. It wasn't good enough to be just reducing the amount of carbon that we emitted. We had to get to net zero along with the rest of the economy. So we made a commitment to do that. And you can see here why it's important to us as an airport. If you look at our scope 1, 2, and 3 carbon emissions, we've eliminated almost all of our scope 1 and 2 carbon emissions. Really, all that's left is scope 3. So that's where we need to focus our energy. And as an airport, we have quite a lot of convening power because most of the world's major airlines fly into us. And so we can have a voice with them. And as a private company, we can be more active and vocal than many other airports, which are state-owned and aren't able to be quite so vocal. So we took a lead on getting to net zero. And over the last few years, we have seen a lot more companies come out and support. Now, the whole global aviation sector has committed to net zero, and that's been backed up by a vote in October last year at ICAO, which is our global governing body. And that sets all countries in the world on a path to net zero by 2050. And we put a lot of work into campaigning for that. I went to the G7 last year. I went to the Commonwealth Heads of Government and spoke to them to get their support. I spoke to President Biden and John Kerry. And it's good to see that SAF in particular, sustainable aviation fuel, is built into the Inflation Reduction Act in the States. And that is going to supercharge the development of a SAF industry, which I hope the Europeans and the UK government will follow on and start to compete, and we'll really see a big shift happening. We're encouraged by the Jet Zero strategy, which again, we've been instrumental in with the UK government. We're looking for a mandate that requires the use of sustainable aviation fuel and a price stability mechanism to close the cost gap, as has happened in other sectors. And I think we're now at a point where SAF is getting to where electric vehicles were just a few years ago, where it switches from being something that a few people did and was kind of a nice theory to a realization this is now happening and is unstoppable. And we are playing our part to make this happen. We've got a huge incentive in place for airlines to switch, and that made us probably the biggest user of SAF in the world last year. And we've trebled the size of that incentive this year, i.e. the amount of SAF we want to see used, and that incentive has been oversubscribed. So the airlines are really getting behind this, and what we're doing is helping. And not long ago, people would have said that SAF is good, but it only goes to half of, it can only be used up to 50%. Well, later this year, Virgin Atlantic will fly a flight from Heathrow to New York with 100% SAF. And that will show that we don't have to wait for any new technology to come out. We just need to scale up production of SAF if we're going to decarbonize aviation. So finally, I just want to touch on the other side of the balance sheet with sustainability, how we make Heathrow a great place to live and work. Work as a responsible business. And there's a few things that we have made progress on this in this space. One is our sustainable travel zone. This is making it easier for both colleagues and passengers to get to the airport by public transport. Really a big focus in the UK at the moment because the ultra low emission scheme is being introduced at the end of August by the Mayor of London. And that is acting as a catalyst to improve connectivity. We've also been helped by the Elizabeth line coming in, and which now can we'll soon connect Liverpool Street, where we are, directly with Heathrow. So we'll be able to make the journey between Heathrow and SNBC in about half an hour, which will be remarkable. And that will significantly widen our catchment area as an airport as well. We've done a huge amount around educational skills using our academy, and we've recently launched our giving back program to make sure that we are supporting local communities. So good progress on a number of fronts. So with that, I will hand over to Javier, who is actually going to do the interesting bit for finance people, which is talk about the numbers.
Thank you, Ion, and hello to everyone. Well, as we have been discussing over the last 3 years, the objective here is to make this as less interesting as possible. So I will not be offended if in siesta time someone starts snorting, because that will be a signal that actually we are becoming more and more predictable. So let me share an overview of our key financial performance, starting from slide 14. So overall, as Ion mentioned, we had a very strong recovery in 2022. And that meant that passengers grew to 62 million, and that helped revenue increasing to £2.9 billion. Obviously, at the same time as we have been, even earlier before we start growing revenue, we have been rebuilding capacity. And that meant that our operating costs also increased by 48% to £1.2 billion. So when you put these two numbers together, our adjusted EBITDA increased to almost £1.7 billion. At a pre-tax level, though, we have seen an increase in our finance cost, which is obviously impacted by interest rates, but also inflation, as a big proportion of our debt is prudently linked to RPI. So the combination of lower passenger numbers and higher funding costs explain why we remain loss-making at the pre-tax level once accounting adjustments on investment properties and financial instruments are excluded. As you know, they are just fair value adjustment, not impacting the cash. Obviously, in a regulated business, that's striking, because you would expect that an effectively regulated business shouldn't face these losses, as regulated charges should offset for this temporary shortfall in traffic and funding costs, which is something that we have been continuously reminding to our independent regulator. From a balance sheet perspective, the balance sheet remains strong, with an increase in cash flow from operations to £1.7 billion, and that has allowed us to increase capital expenditure for the first time in 3 years, with spend nearly doubling to £442 million, including various programs to ensure the airport's safety resilience, but also keep looking after a passenger service. Looking at net debt, there was a small increase at the group level, as the cash generated from operations was offset by increase both in capex, but also an increase in the debt accretion charge linked to inflation in our debt. So let's now take a closer look at the details, starting with revenue on slide 15. As Ion flagged at the start, obviously this year has been a year of growth, and that meant that our revenue saw a significant increase of 140% versus 2021. Obviously, that's driven by passenger numbers, but also aircraft movements as we recover through the pandemic. Specifically, aeronautical revenue increased to £1.9 billion, largely due to the growth in passenger numbers, aircraft, but also cargo movements, and implementation of the interim tariff for 2022. In terms of retails, that revenue also increased to £564 million, driven by higher departing passengers, but also car parking revenue, terminal drop-off, and premium services. Looking at other revenue, that increased also to £470 million, with Heathrow Express income showing significant growth in line with underlying recovery of traffic. That was partially offset, though, by the decrease in other regulated charges, as we stopped collecting the one-off airport cost recovery charge that was only applicable to 2021. As you can see in the slide, in nominal terms, our revenue is only down by 5% in comparison with 2019. However, if you were going to remove the impact of inflation, which you can see below the chart, revenue in real terms is over £500 million lower than 2019, which is around 20% below pre-pandemic levels. And again, this shows that despite the nominal increase in 2022, regulated charges remain insufficient to offset lower traffic volumes and higher funding costs. Moving to costs on slide 16, costs starting to increase even before revenue did, so we were ready for the ramp up. And in 2022, it increased by 48% to £1.2 billion, reflecting the delivery of spend to increase capacity, but also to support the recovery. Looking by components, people cost, including third-party resourcing, increased to £383 million, mainly due to additional cost on recruitment over time, but also training, to ensure that we had the necessary resourcing in place to welcome all the passengers that chose Heathrow in 2022. The increase in operational maintenance costs also reflects the reopening of all our terminals, the impact of high inflation, but also the compensation that we paid to airlines on certain service metrics under the service quality rebates. So John specifically mentioned there that during the summer, we didn't meet certain minimum levels of security waiting time. Looking to other components, utilities and other costs increased by approximately 80%, given the impact of higher consumption, but also higher energy prices and inflation. And again, if you look under the chart in real prices, our costs remain 9% below 2019 levels. We were already an efficient airport before the pandemic, and therefore we expect that costs will reach 2019 levels as soon as 2023, as we start annualizing the run rate that we saw in Q4 2022 on the back of building our capacity in full. Moving on to slide 17, we always, hopefully this is familiar for you, we provide an overview of our cash burn and liquidity position. Hopefully this chart provides a very clear picture on how we have managed our cash over the past 3 years and what we expect going forward. During 2020 and 2021, we maintained tight control on costs, but also capital expenditure. In 2022, we started to gradually increase our operational expenditure as we ramp up operations and face inflationary pressures. In addition, and importantly, we have also started to catch up on underinvestment of around 1.1 billion from the previous years, which has led to an increase in cash outflow. Obviously, we are very willing to gradually increase CapEx in the coming years to the levels that are more aligned with the statutory depreciation of Heathrow, which is around 770 million pounds per year. But obviously, the timing of that CapEx recovery will very much depend on the level of charges that the CAA allow us to levy in the years to come. In terms of interest payments, we have also gradually increased as the benefit of the swap reprofiling program that we did during the pandemic has come to an end. Just as a reminder, this was an action that we took at the end of 2020 to protect cash flow through the worst times of the pandemic, and I'm pleased that the program achieved its full objectives. We expect that cash interest paid will start to increase in the coming years, but at a manageable level as the benefit unwinds. Looking ahead, therefore, you should expect that based on the forecast published in December, we will see cash flows starting to moderate or to increase back to 2019 levels in year in terms of cash. On slide 18, we can also see that we have continued to prioritize the protection of liquidity and cash flows. Obviously, 2022, we have saw the material help by a strong operating performance over the period, generating around 1.7 billion pounds of cash from operations. Also, we have seen the increase in CapEx and debt accretion, inflation accretion in our debt. And as a result of those, we saw that the net debt at the Heathrow SP level increased marginally to 13.5 billion pounds. We explained in previous quarters that we reallocated liquidity across the group structure with 1.1 billion transfer to Heathrow Finance, which overall increased the net debt to 14.6 billion. However, that enabled us to maintain adequate liquidity across the group, now with 1.8 billion pounds of cash sitting in Heathrow SP and a further 1.2 billion pounds sitting in Heathrow Finance. From a funding perspective, we completed over 1.9 billion pounds of funding in 2022, including the refinancing of our revolving credit facilities. And as always, I would like to thank all of you for your extraordinary support once again another year. Unfortunately, we say that you can see from the chart that there are no payments that we have made to external shareholders during 2022. And at this stage, we are forecasting no dividends for the rest of 2023. Moving from cash flow to balance sheet on slide 19, you can see a remarkable decrease in gearing, and we are even below 2019 levels. Obviously, our focus on managing net debt and, importantly, the positive impact of high inflation on our regulatory asset base has resulted in a reduction of gearing ratios even below pre-pandemic levels. In terms of covenants, we have comfortable headroom across all the three classes of our capital structure, and we expect to remain that to be the case over the year. Obviously, the successful execution of our pandemic protection plan and the strong financial discipline has served us well in recent years and positions us in a perfect position to welcome the growth that we foresee in the next months. So our balance sheet is robust, is strong, and we are financially ready for the next phase of growth. To finalize this section and turning to slide 20, let me cover outlook. So our performance outlook remains consistent with the forecast that we published in our investor report back in December, which assume a traffic forecast of 67.2 million passengers and EBITDA of £1.75 billion. The traffic forecast represents the base case, but if you remember, that was within a range from 58 to 73 million passengers. John has flagged at the start that we have seen a solid start of 2023 with traffic numbers both in January, but also in February that we will publish soon, reaching something in the region of 90 to 95% levels of 2019. Therefore, we expect that if this trend were going to continue, we will be trending towards the upper part of the range previously provided. So as soon as we see traffic coming through, obviously we'll keep you updated on forecast and as soon as it's material, but definitely we will provide a new traffic forecast as part of our update in our Q1 results in April. So hopefully you are still awake. And with that, I conclude the financial review and hand it back to John for closing comments. So thank you.
Fantastic. Thank you, Adrian.
So the entire difference between a CEO and a CFO, the CEO's view is we're getting back to our best. The CFO's view is we're getting back to being boring. The truth is we're getting back to our boring best. We want to be predictable. And that's really the point of our strategic update. Our vision has for a long time been to give passengers the best airport service in the world. And this brings together all of the organizations and the 75,000 people at Heathrow to focus on working together to serve passengers. And we've got a good plan in place. And the way we look at this is that we've got a very complex operating environment. We have to have a balanced scorecard of measures that we look at. And the four measures that we look at are Mojo, which is making Heathrow a great place to work, transforming customer service, which is taking us from where we were as one of the worst airports in the world to now one of the best airports in the world. We're number eight. We want to get to number one. So we've got a set of measures that will get us there. Beating our plan, we need to be able to get back to delivering dividends and to be on a stable financial footing. And then sustainable growth. We see huge opportunities for expanding the airport, but we need to do it in a sustainable way. So what we tried to do with this slide is just to give you some sense that what we've done so far with our plan, some of which we've touched on, and what we're going to be doing. So the aim really here, if I tell you what I'm really trying to do, is to just show how boring and predictable we are, that we say what we do and we do what we say. So most of these things that we've done are the things we said we were going to do. And I'll just pull out a few of them which give a sense of progress. So around Mojo, I was really pleased, actually, given the challenges we had over the last few years, that we were named in Glassdoor's top 50 companies to work for in the UK, which is, given how stressful it was, and many of us worked 24/7, at least through last year and largely through the last 3 years, but that people still felt that we were a good employer, as this is assessed by our own colleagues. That I thought was a really remarkable statement. So I'm really encouraged by that. We've also been trying to make sure we live up to that. So cost of living has been a big issue for many of our colleagues. We've got a very good pay deal on the table at the moment with our negotiated colleagues. It's ahead of the level of inflation. I'm hoping that they will vote in favour of that. But we've also been giving them a winter support package, both financial measures and providing a free hot meal for everyone who works for us over the winter period, which is still ongoing. I'm also pleased with the progress we've made on diversity. The positive thing about growing again so quickly is we've been promoting massively internally. We've promoted 1,000 people in the last 12 months. And a lot of that is bringing forward the very diverse colleagues that we have, a mix of colleagues we have in our frontline roles, into management positions. And that's helping to improve our ethnic diversity, which is now up above 20% in our management population. And at the gender, from gender diversity, at the most senior level, we're now at 50-50. So our executive team and our direct reports are now at 50-50. So really good progress on important issues. Our focus going forward is very much about investing in recruitment and training. We have a lot of new managers. They haven't all had the kind of structured training and development that we would want them to have. So this year, we're making sure we are doing that and getting back to full resourcing levels. We've still got not quite 1,000 people that we need to bring into our own organization to help to deliver a lot of the investment plans that we have ahead of us. In terms of transforming customer service, I was very pleased that we were named Best Airport in Europe by Business Traveller. So thank you. Many of you I'd like to think you took part in that. I've had no idea how these surveys happened, but anyway, I will take the win. And actually, we were named second best airport in the world, which I think might be a bit of a stretch, given that many airports were, well, actually, maybe that's true. Many airports were closed last year, so particularly great airports like Hong Kong. So maybe that is possible. But a huge focus on improving underlying performance. And this year is all about getting back to pre-pandemic levels. And a lot of that is actually around getting the basics right. If you've got good levels of punctuality, then the whole system can flow. So that's one of the big areas of our focus. And through the investment program that Javier touched on, you'll start to see increasing numbers of the new security lanes coming in. We already have those in T5 and T2. It's a huge program we have to take on. We have more security scanners at Heathrow than all the other airports in the UK put together. And they're much bigger than the old ones. They have to be installed in a live operating environment. So really challenging piece of work, but we are getting on with doing that. In terms of beat the plan, we've got some quite ambitious plans around retail. It's good to see we have all of our retail stores open from the middle of last year. And we've got some new investments we're putting in there. We're also starting to invest more in cargo, and we'll be able to talk a bit more about that later. And we saw just how important that was during the pandemic, when actually cargo flights were the only things that were flying. So that's a good opportunity. And then finally, in terms of sustainable growth, we've touched a lot on what we have been doing around sustainability so far. The big step up in SAF use this year, I think, will be the start of a transformation. But we're also working on important things like airspace modernization, which alone, if we get it right, could reduce carbon emissions from aviation by about 8%. So that's the biggest and cheapest way of cutting carbon emissions in flying. So we will talk more about that in due course. So back to our boring best is what we aim for. My ambition is that we get back to where we were 4 years ago, where we had to give questions to our home team that they could ask to give a bit of life to these presentations. Over the last few years, we've had some really interesting questions, which I'm disappointed by, because there's been so much going on in aviation. But I hope that over the course of this year, we'll run out of things for you to ask. But I'm sure there's some questions today. So we're going to start with questions on the line, then we'll go to WebEx, then we'll come to the room. So, Annika, can we start with questions on the line?
Thank you. If you do wish to ask an audio question, please press star 11 on your telephone keypad. If you wish to withdraw your question, you may do so by pressing star 11 again to cancel. Once again, it is star 11 on your telephone keypad to register a question. There will be a brief pause while questions are being registered. The first question comes from the line of Danielle Ward from JP Morgan. Please go ahead.
Hi, Danielle.
Hi there. Hello, thank you very much for the call. Just two questions. First one, any update you can provide with regard to CAA conversations? I know the timeline is scheduled for March, but any shift in, any indication of what they may be thinking in terms of moving from indications last June, any update would be great. And then secondly, on the liquidity rebalancing you referenced, I just wondered what the rationale was for having such a large cash balance at Heathrow Finance now. Should we read from that that you're expecting to repay upcoming maturities there from liquidity? I think the first is March 24, or just any further explanation would be great. Thank you.
Fab. Well, let me take the first of those questions, and which will be a quick answer. And then, Sally, do you want to take the liquidity rebalancing? So in terms of CAA, we don't know any more than you do. They, for understandable reasons, keep everything very close to their chest. We are expecting to hear from them in the next couple of weeks. They haven't set a specific date yet, but they might do that in the next week or so. And we really have no idea which way they are going to go. But as you may have heard us comment today, the fact that we are still loss-making and unable to pay dividends at the time when the airlines are back in profit and able to pay dividends tells you that the regulation has got it wrong, given that you'd expect a long-term, stable, regulated business to have much more stable and predictable cash flows than a completely open, competitive market. So we of course, are making that point very well. But we will take a bit of time to see and understand what the CAA have said in their settlement. These documents take a long time to read. I was all surprised with the Brexit agreement that politicians could take a view on them within half a minute of them being published and decide whether they liked them or not, even though they were big enough to fill this room. The CAA settlement won't be quite so big, but we will take time to really assess it before we give a view on it. If we do choose to appeal, or if the airlines choose to appeal, then there's only 6 weeks in which to lodge an appeal, and then the process takes about 6 months to conclude. So either way, there'll be a final outcome we would expect around October. Now, in terms of liquidity rebalancing, Sally, I'd love to answer that one, but I don't know what the answer is.
Thank you, Joe. The liquidity rebalancing is really just to make sure we provide sufficient liquidity across, not only just for the group, but at each level of the debt. So the money at the Heathrow Finance level, you will see that we'll be able to provide the 24 months liquidity in the same way as the cash in RCF sitting at the HSP group. Those caches are sort of like very easily moving around between the group whenever needed, but we just want to make sure we provide sufficient headroom for each level of the debt to all the debt holders within the group.
Thank you. Danielle, was that? Have we answered your question?
Yes, very clear. Thank you.
Great. Thank you. Annika, do we have another question on the line?
One moment, please, for the next question.
The only question I can see on the WebEx at the moment is I can no longer see or hear the presentation. So hopefully somebody is dealing with that.
The next question comes from the line of James Sparrow from BNP Paribas. Please go ahead.
Hi, James.
Yeah, hi, afternoon. Hi, afternoon, everyone. Thanks for the call. Just got a couple of questions. I mean, first of all, you know, it's great to see we're back to kind of some semblance of normality. So just wanted to ask how you're thinking about expansion. I mean, I guess I'm assuming we need to get the CAA out of the way first and find out what the position is going forward. But just one specific question on that is, was any of the CapEx this year spent on expansion? And then the second question I had is just sort of a bit more philosophical about kind of inflation and the high level of inflation. Obviously, this is helping your gearing ratios, but it's not very helpful on the interest cover side. And I know that's something that S&P kind of have raised concerns about. So just curious to hear your thoughts on kind of whether inflation is kind of good or bad. That's it. Thanks.
Great. Thank you. Well, if I just touch on expansion, we haven't spent any capex on expansion this year or last year. There is work that we are doing on it, but we're just doing that as an ongoing running cost. And in terms of our plans, we can't really say more than we will that we still intend to go ahead with expansion. We still think it's the right thing to do. That the business case is still strong, but we'll be laying out our plans for how and when we do that later this year. And in terms of inflation, I mean, it's kind of swings and roundabouts, isn't it, with inflation? But you probably have a more sophisticated answer than that, Abby.
Yes, well, thank you, James. This is something that, as you would expect, we are monitoring and stress testing quite frequently. So we publish our forecast for 2023 in our investor report. As you can see, the metrics there are still comfortable. there. But again, I think that is something that we keep monitoring. I think the key thing that we will keep seeing is probably more accretion payments, which is something that we are, again, monitoring very, very carefully. So overall, I think inflation is positive for our regulated infrastructure business. Obviously, we will keep taking that prudently. And it's probably one of the reasons why, from a dividends perspective, we are forecasting no dividends at this stage until at least inflation starts moderating. We expect the second part of the year, as you know, inflation is, will start to moderate. In terms of credit rating agencies, obviously, we will continue having with them a very strong and frequent dialogue. We keep stress testing all the different scenarios. But again, I think at this stage, we believe that we're in a comfortable level despite the high levels of volatility and inflation both.
Yeah. And just to be clear, don't infer from Javi's comments that as soon as inflation comes down, we'll be paying dividends, because that's not the driver of dividends. We need to generate enough cash, and there's a number of other things we need to do before we're in that position. So yeah, that's why we don't expect dividends this year. James, did that answer your question?
Yeah, that's great. Thanks.
Thank you.
Any
other questions?
Once again, please press *11 on your telephone keypad to register for a question. The next question comes from the line of Paul Dew from Fidelity. Please go ahead.
Hi, Paul.
Hi, thank you very much for the presentation. Very helpful as always. Just on the dividend, would you be able to just talk about those drivers? I think Javier mentioned, obviously, the accretion payment is kind of one thing in the near term, but just how you're thinking about potentially paying dividends, maybe 2024, and what kind of the drivers are for that? I'm assuming part of that is that the CAA hasn't come out of an announcement, so it's hard to kind of forecast what 2024 will look like, but just any color there would be great. And then just quickly on your the comment on kind of traffic and some airlines selling kind of tickets to China again, do you have any visibility on when that market should pick up and when you will start to see a pickup on that? Thank you.
Sure. And Javi, do you want to pick up the dividend question? I'll just pick up on China while you're doing that. I think we're expecting China to open up in May, June. What we typically see when markets open up is that there's a kind of bow wave of pent-up demand that comes through. And as you know, we have a Chinese shareholder, and they are desperate to get over here to visit not just Heathrow, but their other investments as quickly as they can. So I think we'll start to see that again, and then things will settle down again. But I think it'd be fantastic to have the Chinese market open up ahead of the summer peak and also ahead of the new university year, as that's a really important flow of passengers coming into the UK.
Great, thank you, Paul. So in terms of dividends, I think we have remained consistent on our explanation of dividends. I think that we are very keen to pay dividends as soon as it's safe to do so. But obviously, I think that there's an element of underlying variables that requires further stability over the next few months. So obviously, the most obvious one is the outcome from the regulatory process that, as John mentioned, we're expecting in March. Second is traffic. It's true that we have got a strong start of the year, but the potential outcomes in terms of traffic, there's still quite wide. We talked today about a range between 58 to 73, which is quite wide. So obviously, we'll have to wait until in terms of how the market, how the summer goes through. And obviously the third is the previous comment the previous question from James. Inflation is another element that could create lower headroom in terms of some of our credit rating metrics that obviously is critical for us, is critical for you. We continue being committed to recover our A- rating as quickly as possible. So obviously we expect that some of those variables will start to stabilize in the next few years. And as soon as that happens, we will make a view. But as obviously, we'll keep you posted. We continue publishing semi-annual investor reports. We continue seeing you on a quarterly basis. So obviously, if you are going to change our way, we will keep you posted.
Right, thanks, Harry. So we absolutely want to get back to dividends as soon as we can, but we're very conservative and financially. So we will keep you close on that. Great. Thank you, Paul. Did we answer your question?
Yes, all good. Thank you very much.
Fantastic.
One moment, please, for the next question. The next question comes from the line of Jonas Kilstrom from Schroders. Please go ahead.
Hi, Jonas.
Hello there. Good afternoon, everyone. Can you just please talk a little bit about the different elements driving the uplift in costs in 2023? And also, an apology if I missed it, just maybe also talk a little bit about hedging of energy costs.
Do you know, I was almost tempted to have a go at the answer on hedging of energy costs because I did read my brief on this and I didn't understand a word of it. But I have friends who do. Javi, do you want to have a go at both of those?
Yes. So thanks, Jonas. So I think in terms of costs, we published our forecast in December, and the outlook has not changed. So we expect that it's going to move up. I mentioned earlier that from a real cost perspective, we are 9 percentage points down to 2019, and we believe that we were already in the frontier of efficiency. So you should expect that costs will increase over the next few years. The key drivers, obviously, is we continue recruiting. So John mentioned that we have done a fantastic job over the last 18 months to increase from below 50 to 75,000 people across the airport. But obviously, we expect to finalize the recruitment. And temporarily, in the short term, we will exceed the 77,000 people across the airport simply because the level of productivity is below pre-pandemic. I think we are seeing more and more people and new people into the airport, and therefore, temporarily, for a few years, we will exceed half. So we'll have more people, therefore more people costs. Obviously, inflation is impacting most of our cost base, including utilities and consumption. In terms of utilities, during 2022, we did a fantastic exercise in terms of hedging most of our costs. Around 90% of our costs are hedged from a pricing perspective in 2023. And we will see that winding down from 2024 and beyond. But as you can see, the majority of our costs are hedged.
So, Javi, I thought you were going to talk about the Minimax hedging strategy that we had. You're not going to go into that detail.
I will leave it to you, John.
Okay. Well, we aim to get to the average of energy prices over time rather than trying to call the market. So we've got a good sort of 3-year forward view, and actually our hedging policy has been very effective so far this year.
I think as well with our hedging, we don't run any speculative movements here. I think we try to be prudent, and energy is another one. So hopefully you will see, again, another area of no surprises in the years to come.
Thank you.
Sorry, so maybe just two very quick follow-up. So is it presumably wage costs is the main driver of the increase in costs for next year, or this year, I should say.
Other than energy costs, wage costs is the biggest driver, and both within our direct employment base, but also our contracted employment base. And I think, generally, as with other businesses, there are a lot of input costs are going up, at least with inflation, often ahead of inflation due to scarcity across the board. And you'll see that in most sectors. But our focus at the moment is to be prudent on costs, but not to be solely driven by costs. We've got to get the business back to stability and reliability, and then we can really focus on driving down cost. And Javi's example of what we're doing around employment is a good one. Let's have enough people to give a good level of service, and let's drive the productivity, which will probably start to kick in end of this year and into next year. Thank you. Does that answer your question, Jonas?
Yes. Thanks.
Thanks.
There are currently no further questions from the conference call.
Fab. Thank you. Well, we've got one on WebEx, which is from Jonathan Cowley. On finance costs, noting they doubled year on year in full year 2022, directionally, where do you see these going in 2023, higher or lower than 2022? This sounds like a sort of
TV series,
game.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, I think we have hopefully answered that question in our investor report. Again, this is something that we will see as inflation remains high. Probably it will increase. Obviously, as the year progresses and inflation starts to moderate, we will return to levels more aligned to 2019. Obviously, on top of that, when it comes to accruals, there's a significant proportion of fair value elements related with our financial instruments. As always, we suggest not to put too much focus into that, because at the end of the day, fair value movements changes almost on a second basis. They are non-cash movements. And as you know, we don't speculate with hedging. I mentioned earlier, we will hold these hedges to maturity, and therefore it will wind down over time.
Great. Thank you, Javier. So should we come to the room and see if there are any questions in the room? We have some microphones, if anyone does. If you have a question, please wait for the microphone to get to you so that people on the line can hear. Wonderful. This is how we like it. So getting back to boring. Great. So for those on the line, we have no questions in the room, which is fantastic. So look, let me sort of close. Everyone's being too polite to ask about CEO succession. So let me just share what I know, given that I'm not actually involved in the process for choosing my successor. But as you'll know, we announced last month that I'll be standing down after 9 years as chief exec. It's a good year to, or it's a good time to step down, I think, with a new regulatory period, with the business having come out of the crisis years and got back onto a stable basis. I think this is a really good time to hand over. And 9 years is a long time for any chief exec, as you will know. So the board has started a process for succession. We have some good internal candidates. I'm sure there'll be some good external candidates. This is a fantastic role, and I hope we'll get some good talent applying for it. I will stay with the business until we have a successful handover with my successor. So I have no particular date that I'm working to, nor do I have any particular plans for what I'm going to do. I'm just going to focus on Heathrow and making sure that we deliver this year until I hand over. And if it's an internal successor, that'll be sooner rather than later, so perhaps over the summer. If it's an external successor and they have a notice period, then it might be anything up to the end of the year. But sometime during the course of the year, you will have the benefit of not having to listen to me going on anymore, and you'll have the pleasure of someone else coming along and presenting to you. So thank you for being here today. Thanks for all the support you have given, and I will see you again in any event before I move on. But thank you again for today, and thanks particularly to SMBC for all their support and for hosting us here today. Thank you.